Fuck! I thrust into her, going deeper this time, gripping her hips so she couldn't wiggle away from me. God, yes! Almost, I rasped. More, all of it, please, Sloan begged. I pulled out almost to the tip, and then I drove back in on a vicious upthrust. Her tight muscles fought against my invasion for an agonizing moment, and then something gave way, and that final inch slid home. It was ecstasy. I'd fucked my way into heaven again. She held me in a tight, wet clutch, better than anything I'd ever experienced. Despite last night's debauchery, my balls felt so full they ached. My ass was clenched tight, ready to fuck. My entire body was rigid with the desire to move. I managed to pry my eyes open to take it all in. I had her pinned to the couch. Her legs spasmed restlessly around my hips. I could feel the soft buds of her nipples as they played against my chest hair. I wanted to taste them again. I wanted to taste her again. I wanted to bury myself in her until I didn't want her anymore. Are you good? It came out as an angry growl.
So good. So fucking good,
she whimpered. It was all I needed to hear. You shouldn't have left me, I said, sliding out, clenching my teeth at the delicate drag of her muscles. Her body had fought my entrance, and now it was fighting to keep me inside. I punctuated the accusation with several hard thrusts. Those full, round breasts bounced every time I bottomed out inside her. We could have been doing this in a bed, I chastised.
Your couch performance is adequate, she panted.
You made me drive all the way here just to take you and your sweet pussy again, I growled.
Nobody asked you to waste the gas.
Her inner walls fluttered around me. My little librarian liked it when I talked dirty. I ducked my head to lick over one nipple, then the other. She shivered under me and arched her back, putting her breasts on display for me. I fucked into her again and again, using my foot to push off the floor to gain as much leverage as possible.
Yes, more, harder, she chanted.
It was like she was begging me to break her.
God, I hate that you're so good at this, she moaned.
Shut up and take my cock like a good girl, I ordered. That was all it took. I felt her orgasm slam into her. It was familiar to me now. I knew I would never forget how it felt to have Sloane Walton fall apart on my cock. Those slick, tight inner walls clamped down on my aching erection as I impaled her on it. My vision went black as her pussy milked my shaft with an explosion of ripples. I hated the latex that separated us. I hated that last barrier between us with a passion, as if it was keeping me from something I'd waited for my entire life. I held deep and buried my face in her neck, hand gripping her hair, and willed myself not to come, even as she writhed under me, undulated around me. This was the last time, and I still hadn't had enough.
Please don't come yet,
she sobbed as she bucked under me, using my body to shamelessly ride out her release. Why? The question was harsh. My balls were so full, so tight. I needed release.
I want more, she confessed.
God damn it, I muttered. Beads of sweat broke out on my forehead and back as I fought for control. As I pushed my knee down, I held there, sheathed to the hilt, as her tremors finally gentled to delicate squeezes. She was clung to me like I was her salvation. Her entire body vibrated from the orgasm. Do you still want more? I growled. Her eyes fluttered open.
Yes,
she said without hesitation. Then ask nicely. Her unpainted lips curved in a knowing female smirk. Her muscles clamped reflexively around my throbbing dick. Yes, Sloane Walton liked dirty talk.
Please fuck me so hard and deep that I have to think about you and that magnificent cock every time I sit down at work tomorrow.
I closed my eyes and clenched my jaw. I wanted that. Wanted to know she'd be thinking about me, remembering how I'd made her feel. I pulled out of her, the pout of her full lower lip making my dick ache.
Hey!
She complained. but she stopped abruptly when I manhandled her to the edge of the cushion. Wanting to feel her skin against mine, I shrugged out of my shirt and tossed her legs over my shoulders.
Oh, God!
It was a whimper that ended in a muffled squeak when I dragged my tongue through her slick folds. She tasted like secrets and truth, and I was instantaneously addicted. Her thighs trembled on either side of my ears. Open, I ordered, teasing her with the tips of two fingers.
Lucian,
she begged. Baby, open for me. Let me taste you. Her eager compliance went straight to my head and my aching dick. She relaxed her thighs, letting her knees fall open on my shoulders. Apparently, the only way I could get Sloane Walton to do what I wanted was by keeping her on the brink of orgasm.
Don't make me regret this, she hissed.
She had her hands over her eyes so she didn't see the fiendish smile as I pushed my fingers inside her. Her body responded immediately, heels digging into my back, thighs tensing, smooth stomach tightening. Those perfect, full breasts hitched as her bare lips formed an enticing O. Relax, I urged, crooking my fingers in her wet channel. A soft cry escaped her, and the tension slowly began to leave her legs again. I took the opportunity offered and dove between her legs. My tongue laved the hard bud of her clitoris as I pumped my fingers into her precious little cunt. She'd gone rigid again, but it didn't matter because I had access to everything I needed. I plundered with my mouth, stroking and teasing her while I worked my fingers in and out. She was writhing beneath me, her nails digging into my biceps as I held her still. I couldn't get enough of her flavor. I wanted to taste her as she came. I wanted to sample the flavor of her surrender. Come for me, I growled against her sex. She let out a whimper and squirmed against my grip.
I don't want this to be over.
She didn't know what she was saying. She didn't mean it, I told myself. I'd just pushed her past the point where she could comfortably insult me while I fucked her. I'd pushed us both too far. What are you saying? I demanded, without slowing the rhythm of my fingers.
What if I don't want it to be the last time?
Something big and bright lodged itself in my chest. Then I'll just keep making you come until we're tired of it. I didn't know if it was a promise or a threat, but I meant it.
Are you just saying that? Are you fucking with me right now?
I'm not fucking with you, I'm fucking you, I pointed out. Her hands fisted against the cushion.
Oh God, I can't fight it.
Don't you dare fucking fight it. To ensure she couldn't, I added a third finger to her tight sheath and spread the lips of her sex with my opposite hand. My tongue found her swollen clit with laser-like precision. She screamed my name as her body tensed. My balls tightened and my cock jutted out as the pressure built to painful heights. And then she was coming, her beautiful body using my mouth and fingers to steal every ounce of pleasure she craved. She came apart on me, and I could taste the glory of her release. I wanted her to say my name again. I wanted to hear that broken hitch in her husky voice. But she went limp under me, as if her body were melting wax. You okay? I asked, hovering over her.
Nope, never be okay again.
Baby, I gave her a little shake. She opened one mischievous green eye and arched her eyebrow.
My turn.
I had to give her credit for taking me by surprise. She had her hand on my erection before I realized she wasn't about to faint. It was so sudden I almost came in her hand. I gripped her wrist and could feel the pulse of my own cock. No, I said.
You went down on me twice now. I get to go down on you,
she insisted. No, I said again.
Why not?
Her hand tightened wickedly on my shaft. To distract her and give myself what I needed, I turned her around and placed her on her knees on the floor in front of the couch. Because you're going to be too busy getting fucked, I told her as I pushed her head and shoulders down flat on the cushion. I knelt behind her, spread her legs, and adjusted her hips until the crown of my cock was aligned with her weeping sex. Just the barest brushes of that hot, tight little heaven that awaited me had me reaching for every iota of control.
Please, Lucian.
There it was, my name from her lips, begging me to give her something only I could. I bucked forward, seating my entire shaft to the root inside her in one thrust. Her scream was muffled by the cushion. I ran my hands up her spine, over her shoulders, and down her arms while I waited to regain control. Hang on tight, baby, I warned. I eased out, and then used her hips to fuck my way back into her. Her pussy convulsed around me when I hit that secret spot. Jesus, how could she be ready to come again? Her body was a fucking miracle, my fucking miracle. I slid my palms up to cup the heavy weight of her tits and used them for leverage as I began to thrust. I squeezed those full, perfect breasts as I fucked into her tight, wet pussy.
Oh my God,
she chanted. She was ready to come. All she needed was a little bit of pressure in exactly the right spot. I fucking loved being in charge of her pleasure, deciding when and how. It was headier than any other achievement of my entire life. I folded over her, adding my weight to her back and thrusting harder, deeper. I released one breast and brought that hand between her legs. She went rigid under me.
Lucian, I...
Such a good girl, I praised. You're so wet for my cock, aren't you?
What I want is that magical dick of yours in my mouth,
she said, sounding adorably disgruntled. I found her clit just as I gave her nipple a hard tug and buried my cock to the hilt, angling my hips up, up, up. She could do nothing but take what I was giving her, and it went to my head, my balls, my fucking heart. Come for me, Pix. Come on my cock so hard it hurts.
Yes, Lucian, yes,
she cried brokenly. Music to my fucking ears. And then she did exactly as I told her. This time, when she fell apart, convulsing around my shaft, I didn't fight the overwhelming urge to let go. I let her quivering pussy pull my release from me. I ejaculated fiercely, a scorching burst that I wished she could feel. Even as the next hot rope of cum wrenched free and the next, I thought about how it would feel if there were no barriers between us.
Lucian!
She squirmed against me, coming again, or still, as if my pleasure triggered her own. That's my good girl, I said, as I emptied myself into her, imagining a life where she was mine, and I was hers.
24. Grilled Cheese Peace Talks. Sloan. I'm not cuddling with you, I murmured into Lucian's neck. I just can't use my arms or legs. I was sprawled naked over the man's godlike body, too many hours and orgasms beyond caring about anything except Lucian's cock and the endless pleasure it gifted me. He landed a stinging swat to my rear end. Ow! My limbs still work, he said smugly. His limbs and the superhuman dick that was still semi-hard and wearing the last condom in my house. I lifted my head and looked around. Oh, good. We made it upstairs to the bedroom, finally. He pulled me back down, cradling me against his chest, but not before I caught a glimpse of an honest-to-God smile on the man's beautiful face. I decided after the 7 orgasms he'd delivered, I could let him have this moment. Teenage Lucian had been affectionate, I recalled. He'd snuggled with me in this same bed, playing with my hair, stroking my arm or back. He'd submitted to all the hugs and back pats and shoulder squeezes from my parents with a rueful smile, like he'd craved physical contact but didn't want to let on. My heart clenched for the boy who deserved so much more. He stroked a hand through my hair, letting the strands fall against my back, and I felt my eyes go damp. The panic was rising again. That was what had propelled me out of my own hotel room after 4 orgasms and less than 2 hours of sleep. The realization that I was muddling the no-strings-attached present with the feelings of the past. Neither of us was the same person we'd been back then. I couldn't afford to let my feelings for teenage Lucian get tangled up in what was clearly just a physical thing. A very physical thing. "Are we going again?" I asked nonchalantly, hoping not to let on that my entire body was too tired and too sore. Lucian sighed.
"Much as it pains me to admit, Pixie, you've bested me. I'm going to need an ice pack, a bucket of ibuprofen, and a 4-hour nap if you want one last time."
"Loser," I muttered into his neck. "I'm ready to go again."
"Liar."
He tugged on my hair until I looked up at him. "Okay, fine. I'm back to being nauseated by the thought of sex with you," I teased.
"So we're officially done then?"
His face was once again guarded. It was somehow worse after having seen him in so many shields down orgasmic moments. I shrugged one shoulder. "I guess so. I suppose I could feed you before I send you packing." As if on cue, Lucian's stomach rumbled. I feigned a gasp. "I didn't know vampires got hungry." He lunged for me, his teeth grazing my neck.
"Hold still, you snack-sized human."
I gasped with laughter and collapsed against him again. Playful Lucian was an entirely new creature to me. Like Edward after Bella had discovered his secret in Twilight, only I hadn't discovered Lucian's secret. I'd just had a whole lot of sex with him. His hands gentled on me.
"You have a beautiful laugh."
I sat up again and frowned. "Okay, you're officially delirious. Come on, I need lunch and electrolytes since you dehydrated me via my vagina."
"My cock is sore. As in, the day after leg day at the gym sore,"
he complained as we crawled out of bed. I pulled on a blue bathrobe with daisies while Lucian yanked on his underwear. He frowned down at his dress shirt. It was missing a few buttons and had a questionable wet spot on the sleeve. "Hold on." I limped into my closet and found the sweatshirt I was looking for. "Here," I said, tossing it to him. He caught it, and his frown turned into a scowl.
"Whose is this?"
he asked, holding up the extra, extra large Penn State hoodie. "Mine now," I said.
"Whose was it?"
"An old boyfriend. We dated for a couple of months after I graduated college and was working in Hagerstown. He was a social studies teacher."
"Blake."
He said the name like it was an insult. I raised an eyebrow. "You know, unfucked Sloan would be giving you shit for knowing my ex-boyfriend's name from 15 years ago. But well-fucked Sloan is too tired and hungry to start a fight." He threw the sweatshirt back to me.
"I'm not wearing this."
"You're missing out. It's comfortable, and it'll fit you." Lucian picked up his ruined dress shirt and stubbornly shoved his arms through the sleeves.
"You probably think of him every time you wear it."
"Fondly," I said, not above adding just a few drops of lighter fluid to the flames. "Come on, I'm starving." We made quite the picture, stumbling and limping our way down the back stairs into the kitchen. Meow Meow glared judgmentally from her perch on a potholder in the middle of the island. The tip of her tail twitched.
"That's incredibly unhygienic," Lucian observed.
"Good thing you don't plan to spend any time in this house, because every flat surface has probably come into contact with cat butt," I said, ruffling her ears before opening the refrigerator door.
"What's its name?"
"Her name is Meow Meow."
"That's an unimaginative name."
"Her official name is Lady Meowington," I said, opening the cheese drawer.
"That's worse. I'm horrified. You're terrible at naming things."
"Cats name themselves. You start with an official name, and it devolves over the years until you find something they actually respond to. Lady Meowington here only responds to Meow Meow or Hey Asshole." I glanced up and found Lucian eyeing the cat while she devoted herself to cleaning her belly. Meow Meow was a furry lump of disdain. My one-night stand, however, in his underwear and open shirt with his tousled hair and sleepy eyes, was absolutely delectable. I'd known he was good-looking, devastatingly handsome even. But I'd never allowed myself to really look. Now that I had, I was going to need some alcohol with my post-sex snack. I held up two blocks of cheese. How do you feel about grilled cheese? Lucian grimaced.
You eat like a child.
I'm going to make you the best damn grilled cheese you've ever had, and then I'm going to allow you to rub my feet while groveling for my forgiveness. A little more pressure on the arch servant, I ordered. Lucian's strong thumbs dug deeper on the sole of my foot.
Your feet are so small. How do you walk on these things?
You're so weird after a sex marathon and grilled cheese. I took another victorious bite of my buffalo chicken grilled cheese sandwich of awesomeness. Lucian's plate was empty. He'd inhaled his sandwich with gusto and was shooting longing looks at my second half. With an eye roll, I tore the half into two pieces and handed him one. He dropped my foot in his lap and dove in. We'd set up camp in the family room off the kitchen at the back of the house to eat and watch Night Court reruns. I said it was because the TV was bigger, but really it was because I didn't want anyone catching a glimpse of Lucian Rollins through my front windows and broadcasting it to the entire town. Sharing this catastrophe with anyone was not an option. As Bull delivered a punchline to Judge Harold T. Stone, I heard a dramatic thud behind us. I tilted my head on the cushion and spied the cat's hulking fluff prance across the console table against the couch.
What is it doing?
Lucian demanded, swiveling his head. She is trying to make you uncomfortable. Meow Meow sat directly behind him and stared at the back of his head.
It's working.
She doesn't really like people, I explained. Mom and I are the only ones who can pet her. Dad was the only one she'd let pick her up, and that was only if he stood still.
I feel her eyes boring into the back of my head, he complained, shifting closer to me on the cushion.
His bare thigh rested snugly against my knee, his shoulder a comforting weight against mine. Couples did this. Had sex on a Sunday morning and then snuggled up on the couch with junk food to watch old favorites. We were not a couple. We were a mistake. A hot, sexy, mind-melting mistake. Just ignore her. She's so lazy she'd never go out of her way to jump on your head just to bite and claw your face off, I promised cheerily.
That's comforting, he said dryly.
I took Lucian's empty plate and placed it on the table behind me. Meow Meow gave the back of Lucian's head one last scowl before sauntering over to investigate the crumbs. Satisfied that what we were eating was subpar, she heaved herself to the floor and wandered off. Lucian slung his arm over the back of the couch behind me. Was Lucian Rollins snuggling with me? Had I given him a concussion when I'd accidentally banged his head against the headboard while riding him? The studio audience dissolved into hysterics over Dan Fielding's flirtation with Christine Sullivan. This was so normal. So not us. So exactly what I wanted. With a different man, of course, and with a couple of kids thrown into the mix. Lucian had always wanted something different. I couldn't help but wonder if all those things he'd wanted, the wealth, the power, the ability to crush enemies with a flick of his wrist, were just a replacement for what he thought he could never have.
Your father loved this episode, Lucian mused as I attacked the last quarter of my grilled cheese.
He did, I agreed, stacking my empty plate on his. Now that your penis has invaded my vagina on multiple occasions, I think you should tell me why you're so close to my parents. Oh, God. I sat up straighter. You didn't have an affair with my mom, did you?
I did not have an affair with your mother, he said dryly.
Then what kind of a relationship do you have with her? He sighed and paused the episode.
Your parents helped me through a difficult time in my life. I owe them for that.
So you have some kind of invisible tally system, and once you've hit the appropriate number of tick marks, you'll vanish from Mom's life?
You're a lot like your father, he said,
though it didn't sound like a compliment. In what way? I pressed, eager for any connection to the man I missed.
You never give up, even when you should.
He never gave up on you, I said softly.
But I had.
Not that I'd had a choice.
Not many people have the unbridled, delusional optimism that Simon Walton brought to this world.
I sighed against Lucian's broad shoulder. I may have gotten my tenacity from my dad, but I had missed out on the delusional optimism gene. He was one of a kind, I agreed. We were silent for a long moment, both staring straight ahead at the frozen faces on the TV screen. I can't believe Ansel is dead, I said finally. Lucian stiffened next to me like I'd just pushed the button where all his walls came up and the gate to his castle rolled down. I put my hand on his thigh and gripped. Wait. Before we jump into Lucian versus Sloan round 2 million, let's call a temporary ceasefire and have some peace talks. He looked down at me, his expression halfway between amusement and annoyance.
Peace talks. Why do women feel the need to talk everything to death?
If you'll shut up, I'll explain. Now, I'm not admitting to having wondered for a long time what sex with you would be like. His expression went wolfish, and I held up a finger. No, we're still recovering. If we attack each other now, you'll sprain your penis, or I'll lose feeling below the waist.
I'm willing to take that chance.
I rose up on my knees and faced him. Keep it zipped, Sir Fucks-a-Lot. What I'm suggesting is, since we've appeased our curiosity with our one-night-only sexual shenanigans, why don't we apply the same consideration to all the questions we've always wanted answers to?
No.
I pouted. You didn't even consider the offer. That's not very peace-talky of you.
Don't look at me like that.
Sensing impending victory, I deepened my pout, saddened my eyes, and straddled his lap. Come on, big guy. We cleared the air sexually and survived. Why can't we drop a couple of truth bombs, consequence-free, before we go back to normal and never speak again? His handsome face, with its poetic cheekbones and stormy eyes, gave nothing away, but his cock was making its feelings known beneath me.
I'm not above holding a pillow over your face until you stop annoying me, Pix, he warned.
Yes, you are. Please. His hands came to my hips, and he dropped his head against the cushion.
If I say yes.
I wiggled victoriously in his lap, and his hands gripped me tighter as his teeth clenched, deepening the hollows of his face.
Behave. I have conditions.
I slid my hands under his open shirt and rested them on the warm, firm flesh of his shoulders. I'm all ears.
You're never all ears. You're all agendas, he pointed out.
Oh, come on. You're not the least bit curious about anything, I prompted. His eyes were steely on mine as he presumably tried to figure out my motive. I'm just thinking. We cleared the air sexually. Why not clear it all the way? We end today baggage-free, like lancing a boil.
A very attractive metaphor,
Lucian said dryly. Come on, I cajoled. Admit it. It makes sense. I knew how to build up a rapport with a suspect thanks to becoming bulletproof by former Secret Service Special Agent Evie Pomperus. About a year ago, I'd started a secret unofficial book club for a few local high schoolers who were going through tough times as unpopular misfits. We read a lot of self-help and nonfiction about interpersonal relationships, and I didn't mind deploying some psychological warfare when the scenario called for it.
I don't like this, he said.
I bounced victoriously in his lap. But you know I'm right. This could finally be our blank slate, big guy.
Blank slates are for new beginnings.
Ugh, fine. This could be the end.
If I agree, he said,
arresting my movements with his hands.
You have 20 minutes, and then you're shutting up, and I'm taking your clothes off.
I arched an eyebrow. I thought we were done with each other.
Do you have something better to do this afternoon?
I grinned. Nope.
20 minutes, he repeated.
I scrambled off his lap and planted myself against the arm of the couch, hugging a pillow to my chest. I'll go first. What kind of beard maintenance do you do? Or is it just rich guy magic where you wake up, look in the mirror, and command your facial hair to do what you want? His expression was priceless.
You can ask me anything, and you want to know how I maintain my beard?
I shrugged. I'm warming you up before we get to the interesting stuff.
I already regret this. Did you ever have feelings for Knox or Nash?
Lucian's question caught me by surprise. We'd mostly lobbed softballs back and forth, participating in a delicate dance around the minefields of our past. Yeah, I said emphatically.
When?
He demanded, his grip on my feet in his lap tightening. Probably right around the time I hit 14 and they suddenly got hot.
Do Naomi and Lena know you lust after their men?
Yep, they're used to it. Anyone who enjoys looking at attractive men lusts after those two. I laughed when he looked downright grumpy. Oh, come on. You're not left out of that equation. Women walk into glass doors trying to get a better look at you. He grunted. My turn. Why won't you let me blow you? His laugh startled me. Do you find oral sex funny? I demanded.
On the contrary, I take it very seriously.
My lady parts knew this intimately. I nudged him with my foot. Elaborate, Lucifer.
I like being in control,
he said, as if that answered everything. You can be in control during a blowjob. His gaze slid to my mouth.
Not enough.
Clearly, you haven't experienced the right kind of oral sex. I'll be happy to demonstrate in... I checked the clock on the mantel. 7 minutes.
Pass.
Party pooper. Since that was a lame answer, I get another question. Did you tattoo over all your scars? Lucian stared at me for a long beat. I wondered if I'd pushed too far.
Yes,
he said finally. Why?
Because I'd rather have marks on my body that I chose.
I nodded. It made sense. The man was literally rewriting his past on his own skin. He surprised me and reached for my wrist. He rolled it over and examined the silvery scars left behind.
A plastic surgeon could probably do something with this.
I smirked. I don't know. I kind of think it makes me look like a badass. It reminds me of how brave I was once. He cleared his throat and released my wrist.
Have you met your future husband yet?
He asked, changing the subject. I closed my eyes. I officially had my best date since I started this quest.
And?
He prompted. Best doesn't mean much when it's stacked up against all the other catastrophes. Nice guy, wants kids, zero sparks. I almost fell asleep in my soup while he was talking about last season's fantasy football league. But maybe that's what marriage is. A sparkless partnership based on what you can accomplish together.
Is that what you think our friends have? Sparkless partnerships?
Lucian asked, his lips curving ever so slightly. I sighed. No, they tamed the unicorn. At his blank expression, I continued. You know, they found the smoldering, I wasn't my best self until I met you. I want to make all your dreams come true. Kind of, once in a lifetime, I still watch you walk out of the room, love.
And you want the unicorn?
Lucian guessed. Who doesn't? Present company excluded, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, I want the unicorn, I admitted.
Then you'll get it.
I glanced up at him, but there was no hint that he was making fun of me. You think so? He rolled his eyes.
Sloane, what have you ever worked for that you didn't end up getting?
The man had a point. With the exception of my father's health, everything I set my sights on eventually came to fruition. Could I just will the perfect man into my life? So, tell me one of the things my mom was thanking you for at the funeral. He remained silent. As per the rules, I'm not allowed to hold it against you or throw it back in your face ever, I reminded him. He lifted my foot and applied a heavenly thumb to my arch.
Fine. I helped them find their condo.
The man was definitely withholding information. That was nice of you. But in the pursuit of honesty, Mom was more, thank you for saving the life of our favorite child, and less, thanks for sending me a real estate listing, grateful. He muttered something that sounded a lot like tenacious pain in the ass under his breath. Come on, big guy. This boil isn't going to lance itself.
You are such a pain in the ass, he complained.
Oh my God, just tell me already, I said impatiently.
Fine. I bought it for them.
I blinked. Bought what?
If you're going to force me to talk, the least you can do is pretend to listen. I bought the condo for your parents.
That shut me up.
Stop it,
he said, dropping my feet and using my ankles to pull me closer. Stop what? I managed.
Stop trying to read anything into it. It wasn't heroic or thoughtful. I was just balancing the scales.
Crap on a cracker, Lucian. What scales require a very expensive real estate transaction?
Sloane, your parents drove me to college and furnished my first shitty apartment. They helped me get a job. They fed me when I was hungry. They kept an eye on my mother until she moved. They took me out on my birthday every year since I turned 18. They showed up to my college graduation and stood up and cheered when I walked the stage. They invited me to be a part of their family when I couldn't be part of my own.
My eyes were starting to burn and blur. It had been a huge gift, finding the perfect, affordable place just 2 blocks from Dad's oncologist. Lucian had given them that gift. That was very generous of you, I rasped. This was not helping me. If I was going to get over the man, I needed to focus on his dark, stubborn side, not his hidden, microscopic heart of gold.
Do not get emotional about this, he warned.
I'm not getting emotional, I insisted, even as my voice cracked.
I should have just put the pillow over your face.
Thank you, I said.
For what? Not smothering you?
I shook my head and then did something neither of us could have predicted 24 hours ago. I hugged him. My arms went around him, my face pressed into his neck, and I held on. Thank you for what you did for my parents. He tried to disentangle himself, but I refused to let go. Finally, he stopped fighting it and gave me an awkward pat on the back.
I like it better when you hate me.
Me too. He tugged on my ponytail until I met his gaze.
Tell me the truth. Isn't there part of you that wishes you would have gotten that scholarship and gone into sports medicine? Is this life some kind of consolation prize?
He gestured around the family room. Baffled, I sat up straighter. Is that what you think?
You had bigger dreams than this, Sloane.
Lucian, I was a teenager. I also wanted to marry Jerome Bettis from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Just because they were teenage dreams doesn't mean they weren't real,
he said quietly, no longer meeting my eyes. I wondered what teenage Lucian had dreamed of before he'd been forced to become the man of the family. This life is better than any I could have planned at 16, or at 20, hell, even 30. I love this town, this house. I love being close to my sister and my niece. All that time I got with my dad that I wouldn't have had if I'd moved across the country in pursuit of some crazy career, that time is priceless. I would have missed out on so many things. I wouldn't have the library. I wouldn't know Naomi and Lena. So, no, I don't regret for one second that my teenage plans were derailed.
Even though you don't have everything you want,
he pressed.
The husband. The kids.
Yet, I don't have them yet. I built a life based on everything I wanted, and I fit them together one by one. That means the missing pieces of a partner and a family have an almost complete puzzle to fit into. He let out a long breath, but it didn't sound like his usual exasperated sighs. It sounded like he'd let go of something heavy he'd carried for too long. What was it like? I asked.
What was what like?
The week Wiley had you locked up. The silence was oppressive. It felt like a cold, wet blanket had descended on us both, smothering us with its damp weight. I leaned into him and rested my face on his chest, listening to the steady thrum of his heart. After a minute, his hands came to my back and began to stroke slowly.
It was the worst 6 days of my life.
I absorbed the hurt, accepted it. I'd done that to him. I'd hand-delivered his worst moments. How? I asked softly.
He was alone with her. There was no one to protect her. Officer Winslow knew, or at least he suspected, and he'd drive past the house a few times a shift. I know your parents were watching too, but there's a lot of damage that can still be done behind closed doors.
I swallowed around the lump in my throat.
I knew it was only a matter of time before he ended up in the cell next to mine,
he continued.
It didn't matter how friendly he was with the cops. Even Ogden wouldn't have helped him cover up a murder. But I knew my life was over. I turned 18 in a cell, and I knew those bars and bunks were my future. I was going to have to become the kind of person who survived in a cage.
A tear scalded its way down my cheek.
My safety, my well-being was at the mercy of all those badges. I wasn't even human to some of them.
I'm sorry. The words were there in my throat, on my tongue, begging to be let loose. But they'd never be enough for either one of us, and I didn't know if that meant they weren't worth saying.
What is that incessant buzzing noise?
Lucian demanded. He'd left his memories behind while I was still mired in them. Oh my God, it's my phone. I haven't looked at it since you showed up and whipped your dick out. I sprang off the couch and raced into the kitchen where I found my phone face down next to Mary Louise's case files. 24 messages and 2 missed calls? Lucian appeared in the doorway, looking like debauchery personified.
Is there an emergency?
I can't tell yet, I said, scrolling to the top of the texts. Naomi.
Stefan Lau, did you really chicken out on telling Jeremiah you see a future with him and run back to New York this morning for a fake work excuse?
Steph.
First of all, a board of directors meeting is not a fake work excuse. Second, yes. Yes, I did.
Lena.
Wow, Steph. I never pegged you as a coward.
Steph.
Excuse me, Ms. Pit Stains on her wedding dress.
Lena.
I may have sweaty pits, but at least I'm still in knock-em-out with the man I love.
Naomi.
Normally, I shy away from conflict and raise the de-escalation flag. However, in this case, I feel it's important to present a relevant case study. Knox Morgan.
Steph.
I'm not pulling a Knox Morgan. I just had business to attend to, so I'm attending to it.
Lena.
You forgot to put quotes around business.
No emergency. Just busting on Steph for getting ready to make a grand gesture and then panicking and leaving town, I reported.
What kind of grand gesture?
Lucian asked, opening a cabinet and helping himself to a glass.
He wants to move here and live with his hot boyfriend, but he got cold feet about actually admitting it to Jeremiah, I said, still scrolling while Lucian got himself a drink of water.
Steph.
Where's Sloane? She's always more fun to pick on than me.
Naomi.
Sloane!
Lena.
Yell Sloane!
Steph.
You don't think she snuck off for another date without telling us and got murdered, do you?
Lena.
Well, I do now.
Naomi.
She's not answering her phone. I'm worried.
Lena.
Maybe she's in the shower?
Steph.
Maybe she's in the shower with someone.
Naomi.
She wouldn't be taking a 90-minute shower.
Steph.
Not alone, at least.
Lena.
She's probably working and left her phone in her office.
Naomi.
I distinctly remember her saying she had today off. Chloe told Waylay Sloane had plans last night, but no one seems to know what they were.
Steph.
Hopefully she's getting laid.
Lena.
We haven't heard from her since 7:13 p.m. last night. Nobody gets laid for that long.
I smirked reading Lena's text. I turned the screen so Lucian could read it.
Well, that's not true, I said smugly.
You'd better tell your friends that,
he said, pointing to the next message.
Naomi.
Maybe we should go to her house?
Uh-oh, I said.
Lena.
Nash and I are naked, but we could be unnaked in about 10 minutes. Try calling her again and we'll get dressed.
Shit, I muttered, thumbs flying over the screen.
Me. No need for a welfare check. I'm alive and well, just busy.
They're going to know what you're busy doing,
Lucian pointed out, running his hand down my ponytail. Damn it. He was right. I'll tell them I'm cleaning the house.
Naomi will be over here with a truckload of cleaning supplies in 5 minutes,
he predicted.
Pick something they'll all find unpleasant.
I'll go with the truth then. They'll be horrified, I joked.
His grip on my hair tightened.
Would you rather spend the afternoon being interrogated by your friends or letting me fuck you?
Me. I'm having my septic tank pumped. The fumes are powerful. Anyone want to come over for game night?
25. I will not apply a chemical peel to my dick. Lucian. It was an exceptionally gray Monday. The invigorating February air was razor sharp as it hit my lungs. I felt awake, alive, ready to greet the day and destroy my enemies. Good morning, sir. My driver greeted me. Morning, Hank, I said, sliding into the back seat of the SUV. How was your weekend? He blinked. Fine, sir. Is everything all right? Everything is excellent. That's good. He closed the door with a look of concern. I pulled out my phone and typed a text to Sloane. Me. Good morning. I frowned at the words. They seemed flat and inconsequential considering the sexual acrobatics we'd performed all weekend long. Me. Good morning, beautiful. No, definitely not. That one made me sound like a lovesick Morgan brother. I immediately deleted the text. What was the appropriate Monday morning greeting for the librarian who had fucked me into oblivion repeatedly? Me. My cock is chafed. Sloane. Good morning to you, too. I think you sprained my vagina with too many orgasms. Me. Is there some kind of balm or laser resurfacing treatment for this kind of situation? Sloane. Repeat after me. I will not apply a chemical peel to my dick. Me. I had two Charlie horses in my calves last night. Sloane. Poor baby. Drink some pickle juice and then tell me how I'm supposed to not think about our rabid fucking every time I sit down today. Me. If I have to be haunted by our poor choices, so do you. Sloane. Good thing we wised up and won't be making the same mistake again. Our sex parts need time to heal. Me. Glad we got it out of our systems. I haven't even thought about you naked at all in the last 4 seconds. Sloane. Hold, please. I need to get through a staff meeting today without thinking about your staff. She would think about me all day long, I decided with manly satisfaction as I pocketed my phone. Good. Not that I'd give her a second thought, of course. What happened? Petula demanded the second I stepped off the elevator. With what? You look cheerful. Did you unseat another senator? I had a nice weekend, I said, with as much dignity as I could muster. Petula rattled off the morning's appointments while shooting me suspicious looks. What's with the face? Lena asked, stepping out of the kitchen. I realized that for once I wasn't the first person in the office. In fact, half of the staff was already here, gearing up for the day. I must have slept later than I thought, thanks to she who shall not be thought of. Thank you, Petula. I'll take it from here, I said, dismissing her. If he starts to look feverish, I want to know, Petula told Lena. I have a medical team on standby. There's nothing wrong with my face, I assured my newest employee. The mouth part is fighting its natural frown. You're almost smiling, she observed. Nolan appeared behind her, holding a cup of coffee and a stack of files.
Whoa, someone got laid, he announced, taking one look at my face.
Don't make me send you through HR's 6-week sexual harassment training, I warned, telegraphing a message of dire consequences if he dared mention Sloane's name in front of Lena.
He didn't even threaten to fire you, Lena Stage whispered. It's official. Lucian Rollins has been abducted by aliens.
Aliens that had a lot of sex with him. Initiate Protocol D, people, Nolan announced. Employees nearby grinned at him. You're both fired, I decided.
You might want to hold off on that until I update you on that issue we discussed Saturday night, Nolan said, nodding in the direction of his office.
This concerns you too, I told Lena. Together, the three of us trooped into Nolan's office. He closed the door and dumped the files on his desk. Lena took a seat and crossed one long leg over the other. I remained standing.
I pulled Travers off the Regulio background check and sent him sniffing around Felix Metzer's family this weekend.
And? I prompted.
He was able to confirm that Tate Dilton was the one who showed up at the Metzer family barbecue. Three family members ID'd him after Travers showed them a couple of photos of our mustachioed deceased douchebag.
Lena was on her feet.
Tate Dilton, that son of a bitch who tried to murder my fiancé?
That's the one, Nolan said. Apparently, he was connected to the man Anthony Hugo commissioned to create the list of law enforcement and informants, I explained.
Did he put Nash's name on that list?
Lena demanded. Her fury was a controlled, icy blast.
It looks that way, Nolan said.
But why the hell would he put Nash's name on the list and then be the one to try to take him out? She asked. Why not just pull the trigger and forget the list?
Nolan glanced at me. The best we can figure it, Dilton was a dumbass.
Well, that tracks, Lena said.
He wanted Nash out of the picture, but not enough to pull the trigger himself until Duncan offered him cash. He could have been playing both sides, doing a little work for Anthony over here and a little something for Duncan over there. There's no loyalty in dipshit criminals, Nolan explained. It looks like that ties everything up in a nice neat bow, I said. Dilton put Nash's name on the list, Dilton pulled the trigger twice, and Dilton ended up dead. Lena's eyes narrowed.
I wish that asshole wasn't dead so I could knee him in the balls and wax his mustache.
You, me, and the boss man, Nolan agreed. I'm telling Nash, Lena announced. NDA or not, he deserves to know. I assumed you would. It worked in my favor, since then she'd have to listen to him bitch about civilians sticking their noses into law enforcement investigations instead of me. She sighed.
Thanks for reading me in.
Welcome to the team, Nolan said.
Speaking of work, Lena said, Morgenstern Credit Corporation was just informed they're about to be hit with a lawsuit for skeezy debt collection practices. The attorney sends her thanks, by the way. She thinks this might turn into a class action suit.
Good, I said, checking my phone for messages.
You know, it sure is a small world, she mused. Sloan went out with a guy from Morgenstern who tried to scam her by faking his own death.
Huh, no kidding, Nolan said, looking pointedly at me. Are we done here? I asked.
I've got a grumpy chief of police to call, Lena said.
She was already pulling her phone out of her blazer pocket before she hit the hall. So, not to be that guy, but now that we know who put Nash's name on that list, are we still planning on giving the FBI a hand with their case against Hugo? Nolan asked. I shoved my hands in my pockets. It wasn't Duncan who had men tail Holly. Anthony made it personal. I'll move destroy the fucker to the top of our to-do list, Nolan said amicably. What are you doing for your wife for Valentine's Day? I asked suddenly. Nolan's face lit up. Callie's been working long hours lately, so I got a pair of massage therapists coming to the house for a couple's massage in front of the fireplace. Then I'm going to order her favorite pizza, and we're going to camp out on the couch, watching rom-coms and drinking old-fashions until the frisky part of the festivities begins. Men shouldn't use words like frisky. So what about you? Big plans for the Big V? Why do I bother talking to you? Nolan grinned. Because you secretly love me and think I'm delightful. So, you and Sloan? I hated how much I'd wanted someone to say her name in front of me. What about Sloan? You walked in looking like your horse took the triple crown. Now you're standing in my office, willingly making small talk. Somebody got under that prickly exterior. My money's on Blondie. As always, I regret our conversation, I said, heading for the door. Fine, but if you need relationship advice, you know where to find me, he called after me. I presented him with my middle finger on my way out. Nash. Lena is reporting that the head of the evil empire is walking around the office looking like he just got laid. Knox. Hope this one didn't steal your watch and your robe. Lucian. Running an evil empire takes significant focus. I don't have time for your girlish gossip, especially now that I have to fire Lena. Knox. He definitely got laid. Nash. Let me know if you need to file a robbery report. Knox. Wait a second. Weren't you in Knockemout this weekend? Nisi said you called in a pizza order Sunday. Nash. Don't tell me you finally gave in to Mrs. Tweedy's advances. Lucian. What Mrs. Tweedy and I do or don't do is none of your business. Nash. I'm begging you. Please don't drive some poor, unsuspecting Knockemout woman crazy enough to start stalking you. I don't have the manpower to deal with it. Sloan. I've had three patrons tell me I'm glowing. I had to start telling people I found a new foundation so they wouldn't know it was orgasmic. How's your day? Destroy the economies of any small countries yet? Me. Petula has a medical team on standby because I smiled. Lena wants to know why I'm not frowning enough, and Nolan thinks that I secretly love him. I hate everything. Sloan. On the bright side, your penis will have time to heal since you won't be shoving it inside me anytime soon. Me. Just to clarify for the official documents my lawyer is drawing up, we're no longer having sex, correct? Sloan.
I believe that is what was discussed somewhere between orgasms and your snoring when we took a nap on my couch.
Me. That was a coma, not a nap. So we're done then, never to be mentioned again. You're off to focus on finding Mr. Perfect to build your gigantic, unruly family, and I'm free to continue my capitalistic pillaging. Sloan.
Yep, have fun pillaging.
Me. Have fun finding a husband who isn't incredibly disappointing in bed. Sloan.
It's going to take hours upon hours of exhaustive, naked research on my part.
Me. Are you sure your endurance is up for the task? Perhaps you should consider a training program to improve your cardiovascular baseline.
Sloan. Are you offering to sex coach me?
Me. Are you considering the offer?
Sloan. What about the official documents your lawyer is drawing up? I'd hate for you to waste all that money by having sex with me again.
Me. I can have the contract post-dated. What are you doing Friday?
Sloan. Friday as in Valentine's Day?
Me. Friday as in Friday.
Sloan. I'm hosting an erotic author for a sexy adults-only event at the library.
Me. And after?
Sloan. I guess after I'll be training on your very large penis.
Me. For science. Emery.
Sasha said yes to the symphony.
Me. Congratulations. You're one step closer to ending your bachelorhood.
Emery. I don't know how to date in this day and age. Do I bring her flowers or wine? Is a corsage acceptable? If she texts me, should I respond with an emoji or a gif? How much body hair is acceptable on a man these days?
The image consultants on the screen on the wall above the conference table were annoying me with their inability to agree on how best to begin championing Sheila Chandra to the national media. I was about to tell them so when Petula signaled me from the door. I gestured for Nolan to take over.
Look, folks, we're not trying to turn her into a completely different person and alienate her from the following she's already built.
He began more politely than I would have.
Grace from security needs a face-to-face.
Petula explained when I joined her in the hallway. That was never a good thing. Except for the time Grace told me she was pregnant with twins. One look at my head of security's face when I entered my office, and I knew this had nothing to do with maternity leave. Grace wore a black suit, tactical boots, and a frown on her lovely face. Her black hair was tamed into its usual sleek bun that had been part of her uniform before I'd poached her from the Secret Service.
We've got a problem,
she announced without preamble. Petula shut the door and left us alone. What is it?
We found a tracking device on your vehicle during our weekly sweep.
Which one? I asked, aware that such a rich guy question would have Sloan rolling her eyes.
The Escalade. I had the team sweep your personal vehicles as well, but they were all clear.
Relief coursed through me. I'd driven the Range Rover to knock him out. I could have led Hugo straight to Sloan. Did you remove it? I asked tersely. Grace's lips curved.
Not yet. I figured you might want to take the opportunity to fuck with Hugo and his men, sir. My team is going over all the employee vehicles in the garage as we speak. Once we're satisfied, we'll do a bug sweep of your home and offices.
Good. Increase security here at the office while I figure out how to use this against Hugo.
26. Dewey Decimal Justice. Sloan. A tiny groan escaped me as I maneuvered the card into the reference section and pulled a volume at random off the shelf. My entire body hurt. It was distracting me from my Monday, and by it, I meant Lucian Rollins, my nemesis, the man who had fucked me into oblivion, promised to never call, and then made a date with me for Valentine's Day. I slid a dollar bill inside the cover and put the book back on the shelf. It was official. I had lost my damn mind. It was why I'd abandoned my regularly scheduled to-do list to help Jamal set up for the monthly Kids Dewey Decimal Scavenger Hunt extravaganza. I had to get away from my phone so I would stop checking it to see if the man I hated had texted me. There you are! Naomi appeared in the stacks with a coffee in each hand. I patted my chest. Holy cheese and crackers, woman! Don't sneak up on me like that! Sorry. I would have called for you, but the shushy twins already shushed me twice this morning. The shushy twins were elderly, widowed tattletales who spent every Monday morning on the first floor of the library working on their crossword puzzles and policing the behavior of all patrons and staff. I shuddered. They busted me for turning pages too loudly last week. Then it's a good thing we're meeting in one of the conference rooms upstairs because the lawyer is here. She's early, I said, noting the time on my watch. I know. I like her already, Naomi said, taking a hit of coffee. Are those both yours? I asked. Well, they weren't going to be, but it took me one entire cappuccino to find you, so unfortunately you have to acquire your own caffeine now. Fran Vereen was a tall, boxy woman in her early 60s. She wore her blonde haircut bluntly at the shoulders, black pants, neon green heels, and a pale pink leather blazer emblazoned with lilies of the valley. I, too, liked her already. Thank you for battling the traffic to pay us a visit, I said, offering her my hand. It's nice to get out of the city every once in a while and play death race through Northern Virginia, she said. Shall we get started? 10 minutes later, Naomi and I shared a shell-shocked glance. Fran wasn't your run-of-the-mill attorney. She was the kind you called when you woke up next to a dead body. Lucian had hand-delivered the best of the best, and the most expensive of the expensive. So what you're saying is we should be mentally prepared for a very expensive, very long fight, I repeated. Like I said, things are incredibly difficult once a person is incarcerated. There's little incentive for a court to reopen a case they already invested in and won. But we have options. My head was spinning. Okay, let me try to summarize this, I said, reviewing my notes. An appeal means taking the case to the appellate level and arguing the entire thing all over again. A commutation of sentence comes from the governor and could shorten Mary Louise's sentence, possibly to time served. But the Virginia judicial system is so confident in itself, this is a slippery slope, which also means a full pardon, also from the governor, is an even trickier quest. To make matters worse, the state abolished discretionary parole in 1995, which means all prisoners are required to serve at least 85% of their sentence. This doesn't sound hopeful, Naomi said. It's a process that could take years, Fran explained. Years meant expensive. Years meant Mary Louise wouldn't get to see Alan graduate law school. No offense, Fran, but I was feeling a lot more optimistic about this before I met you, I confessed. Fran's grin was lightning quick. It's my job to bring the doom and gloom to make sure you understand worst-case scenarios, which in this case means investing several boatloads of time, money, and energy, but... I perked up. I think we have a good shot at winning this, she continued. You're a roller coaster, Fran, I told her. I get that a lot. Here's what we do have going for us. The sentence is wildly disproportionate to similar charges in the state, which is reason enough to appeal. Given the fact that she's been through several public defenders, we can also argue that Ms. Upshaw did not receive proper representation. That sounds reasonable, Naomi said. We also have you, Fran said, looking at me. I pointed at myself. Me? We need interest in the case, in Mary Louise. The more attention we can bring to this, the better. You've heard of convictions being overturned thanks to true crime podcasts and their rabid followings. Sure, but I don't have a podcast. No, but you have a face and a story. We're sitting here today because your father passed away and you wanted to continue his legacy of championing the underdog. You, your dad, his connection to Mary Louise through her son, it's a story, and stories make people care. I get that, Believe me, I do, I said, sweeping my arm toward the window to indicate the book stacks. But how am I going to help on that front?
You're the face, Fran answered. We want people to know who Mary Louise is, why we're working to get her out, what they can do to help, and you're the one who is going to tell them.
Why can't you be the one to tell them? I asked uneasily.
Because nobody likes lawyers. You're a small-town librarian who believes in social justice. You're smart, you're pretty, and you're non-threatening.
Naomi choked on her second cappuccino.
She's a little threatening.
That works too, Fran said. Okay, so what do I have to do? I asked. Fran interlaced her fingers.
We'll start small. I'll set up an interview for you with some local media. I can put you in touch with some PR folks, give you some talking points. Once that article comes out and we get some interest drummed up, I'll see about an in-camera review with the sentencing judge.
What's an in-camera review? Naomi asked.
Basically, I'll ask for a private in-chambers meet with the judge and district attorney. We can ask Judge Atkins to reconsider the sentence.
I straightened in my chair. Wait, the judge could just decide to reduce the sentence?
It's a possibility. I haven't done any digging into him yet, Fran cautioned. But this is an older conviction. The judge may have mellowed a little with time, or he might appreciate the PR boost that comes with criminal justice reform.
Naomi and I shared another look, a triumphant one.
I'll give the best damn interview in the history of interviews, I promised.
Fran shook her head.
They're gonna love you.
How does this work financially? The ever-practical Naomi asked.
My firm takes on a limited number of pro bono cases a year, Fran said, eyeing us both. If this becomes a case that requires a significant time investment, we may ask you to pay reasonable court costs.
Or we settle the whole thing in one visit with the judge, I pointed out. So how do we move forward? Do we need to sign something to make it official?
I just so happen to have a retainer letter with me, Fran said, snapping open her sleek briefcase. Once this is signed, I'll pay my new client a visit.
Me. Not that you care, but the attorney has been retained. And she's taking the case pro bono. She's on her way to meet Mary Louise. Lucian.
Congratulations, exclamation point abuser. Welcome to the nightmare of the justice system.
Me. Has anyone told you that you really need to tone down the over-the-top positivity? No. Weird. Lucian.
Has anyone told you that you're annoying? I'm the 11th person today. Not surprising.
27. Special Delivery Electro Sexolites. Sloan. Valentine's Day rolled in to knock him out with 4 inches of snow and a wind chill that was best not mentioned. The library staff and I had decked the stacks with a variety of Valentine's Day decorations, from handmade pink and red hearts with handwritten affirmations in the children's section to book displays of romance novels and the St. Valentine's Day Massacre on the second floor, complete with a tape outline of a body on the floor. We'd covered our bases for our patrons, both the romantic and the grumbly. Things were pretty damn good. We were all set up for the evening's special event. My interview with the local paper about Mary Louise had been posted and had seen a positive reaction, which had led immediately to a second interview with the bigger, more important Arlington Gazette. And I had a sex date with Lucian freaking Rollins.
Just one more inch, I groaned as I stretched as far as my muscles would allow.
Get your ass down here right now, Sloaney Baloney,
a familiar authority figure ordered. I stopped what I was doing and glared down at Chief Nash Morgan.
Don't make me shush you. You're on my home turf, buddy, I shot back from the top rung of the ladder.
Your turf is about to be splattered with your pretty face when you fall, he admonished.
I climbed down the ladder and slapped a purple, glittery heart to the man's chest.
Since you're so manly, you finish hanging the heart garland. Nash mounted the ladder in a warning sticker-abiding kind of way and made quick work of the garland. I felt no shame in joining the rest of the female patrons in admiring his superior posterior.
"Did you come in here just to show up my decorating skills?" I asked when he climbed back down.
"I might have an ulterior motive,"
he said, scanning the folding chairs we'd arranged facing a podium.
"What's going on here?"
"We've got a guest author coming in tonight, Cecilia Blatch. She writes dark and dirty paranormal romance. The book club has been obsessed with her since we picked up her series. We're hosting her for a book whining."
"A book whining?"
I grinned. "It's like a book signing, but with wine."
"Nice. But shouldn't you have a Valentine's date?"
"Me? Why? What did you hear?"
Did he know about Lucian? Had Lucian told him?
Of course not. Lucian never told anyone anything.
Nash's gaze sharpened.
"Now that's an odd reaction to me asking you how your dating life is going. With all those dates you've been going on, I figured you'd have a hot date tonight."
"Oh, those dates. Not the secret kind that involved my downtown being invaded by Lucian Rollins. Great. Now I was thinking about Lucian's penis. That wasn't good. Had I waited too long to respond to Nash? He was looking at me strangely. Was I being weird? Was Lucian's penis making me make things weird? Did every woman who ever slept with Lucian act like this?"
I imagined a legion of penis-hypnotized women wandering like a herd of zombies behind Lucian as he went about his day.
"Ah, yes. Well, I've had this event on the calendar for a while, and I didn't want to miss it, so no date for me," I said, sounding like I was being strangled.
Nash peered down at me.
"You okay? You're turning red."
It's, hot in here."